Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Duluth, Minnesota is all the way north, just 150 miles from the Canadian border. The county that Duluth is in has a population of 200,000, of which only 1.6% is Latino, according to the Census Bureau. That's 3,000 people out of the 200,000 people. As long ago as 2007, the local newspaper, the Duluth News Tribune, reported that the aging white population there had caused healthcare employers and other industries to recruit Latino and Native American workers to fill needed positions. But when President Trump held a rally in Duluth last night, 1,500 miles from the Mexican border, this chant broke out in the crowd. Build that wall.
So we've already started the wall. We got 1.6 million. The wall has been started. San Diego and lots of different places. And we go, but boy, it's tough. They want to do anything they can to obstruct and to make sure it doesn't happen. But it's happening. It's happening.
And the Duluth News Tribune this morning describes the crowd last night as fawning. The headline was Trump playful in Duluth. Not playing was a crowd of protesters at LaGuardia Airport last night who came out to support the latest group of children separated from their parents to be brought to New York.
We know that this administration is trying to do everything to separate their families.
The estimates today are there are hundreds of those separated kids being housed right here in our area. A foster home agency in East Harlem called Cayuga Centers confirmed to our website Gothamist yesterday that they are housing some. So what happens to those children now that the president has issued an executive order to house detained families together? What will happen to the future families who cross into the U.S. illegally with fewer family detention center units than people they'll probably want to hold? And what will happen in Congress now that a temporary fix to future separation has been ordered, at least on paper? Will they aim for a comprehensive immigration reform compromise or feel like the crisis is over and they go sit back on their hands? My first guest today is former New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito. She represented East Harlem, where Cayuga Centers is located. She's now with the Latino Victory Fund, which works to ensure that the voices and values of Latinos are reflected at every level of government. And she went to the border to try to see some child holding centers for herself. Speaker, welcome back to WNYC. Good morning.
I got very emotional listening to some of that audio because I start wondering what we're coming to as a country, you know? When you have people chanting that build the wall and the lack of empathy and what we're coming to, I mean, this is horrific what is happening to these children and that we can't understand how deplorable this is and that some people would actually... I'm very overwhelmed, to be honest.
There's a lot of crying going on in public this week by people who are not usually seen crying in public. What was your reaction? I don't know. Have you ever been to Duluth?
No. I mean, I'm just, you know, when you see the public pronouncements by Trump lately, you know, the way he categorizes us as Latinos, as immigrants, these children, right, that we're here to wreak havoc, we're here to hurt, we're here to cause pain and death, equating those that cross the border with MS-13. What he's doing is really dehumanizing us in the eyes of his base, and that they don't see these children as children. They see them as what I was saying earlier, and I don't take this lightly, as terrorists, because they see those children as we're dehumanizing it. So this is all on Trump. This executive order yesterday was a sham, and any attempt to give him any type of credit is ill-advised. I think it's really misguided and misinformed. So we are nowhere with this, right? We're going from separating these children to indefinite detention with their families. It's not a win-win situation at all. And so we need to keep pushing back. And I'm very hopeful, right, when you see the people going out to LaGuardia, when you see candlelight vigils happening in front of the Cayuga Center in East Harlem. I mean, people are not taking this sitting down. And that gives me a sense of hope that we are going to reclaim this country and our democracy. And it's really getting to be a point where we have to put our bodies on the line. And we're seeing that. And I'm proud of those that are doing that.
You can cry with tears of grief, and you can cry with tears of joy on the same day, right?
Yes, I mean, we have to. And, you know, I thank the mayor for what he did yesterday. I know he's at the border today. Down in Tornillo, which is where they were setting up this outdoor camp, quote-unquote. I don't call it a camp. It's an outdoor prison. That area is extremely isolated. It is barren. It is arid. It is hot. It is very far removed, so obviously trying to make it seem out of sight, out of mind. And with that, you know, Victory Project, we worked hand-in-hand with Congressman O'Rourke and Veronica Escobar, who will be the first Latina to represent Texas in Congress, to put that Father's Day march in Tornillo together. We want it to be visible. In less than 24 hours, over 1,000 people showed up. We wanted to make sure that our presence was known, that we were pushing back, that we're not going to be silent against this inhumanity, and that we are going to continue to pressure this complicit Republican Congress. We're going to hold them accountable, and that is you know, that will be seen, and it is being seen at the ballot box.
My guest is former New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito, now with the Latino Victory Fund, as we talk about all these immigration situations at the border and here in New York. It's amazing. Our lines are already full, but except for one. So if anybody wants to jump in on that line, it's 212-433-WNYC. And we will go to some callers for Melissa Mark Viverito, 212-433-9692. I just want to know first, though, why did you call the executive order a scam? A lot of people are happy that at least he's saying future families who cross illegally will be detained together rather than separated like had been.
Of course, having a child with their parent is incredibly important. But we're going into holding them indefinitely in detention. So that, it, to me, is not resolving a problem. I do not believe this president should be getting any credit. He created this crisis. And he has to take full ownership, as does the Republican Congress, which refuses to hold him accountable. He keeps pushing the line, and he keeps taking us further, 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 and nobody is putting a stop to it. This is authoritarianism that we're seeing. We're sliding backwards, and the Congress needs to be held accountable as well. So, yes, the children will be with their parents. Great, understood, but this does not solve the problem when you're holding people indefinitely in detention and you continue to dehumanize us as a people. So this is not solving it. We have to figure out a way. Immigration reform is obviously not going to happen in the way that we would like to see it happen under this administration and under this Congress, and anything that they will present will not be of benefit to our community. So that is of concern. So I don't think we should be giving Trump any sort of credit here, because he created this crisis, and it was definitely misinformed, and so that's why I say that.
You mentioned before how he portrays all Latino or at least Central American immigrants as MS-13 members, and he definitely does that. It's out-and-out demagoguery to get the general public to think of the general Latin American immigrant public as criminal threats. Why do you think it's so difficult to get the actual stats out there? Because they do get reported in the media. You can look it up in so many places that immigrants in general, and including undocumented immigrants, commit violent crime at a lower rate than native-born Americans. But it doesn't seem to land.
Exactly. And I mean, everything, there's no rationality, anything that is put forward by this administration. There's no factual, there's no analysis. There's not, you know, when we talk about sanctuary cities, been studies that have proven that those cities that do have policies that are more welcoming and inclusive are actually safer cities. When we're talking about MS-13, this is not MS-13 as a gang is a gang that's created and that was formed here in the United States. So let's be clear about it. So, yes, you're right. The facts are out there. They don't seem to stick with his base because he continues to throw the red meat at them, and he utilizes the power of his Twitter and social media. And he does give, you know, the press does report on him. So we do see the live feeds all the time of his reporting. I mean, it's, so there's a lot at stake here. But definitely we have to keep putting out there the right information, and we're going to continue to hold these electeds accountable, particularly Congress, because that is where the changes need to happen. And I continue to support the policies that we implemented here in the city of New York that have led the way, right? That we are an inclusive city, and that we're going to continue to affirm and support those people that come here to contribute positively. And we should be proud of the work that we've done in the city, because we are by far the safest city in the country. Our immigrant communities make us such and make us a more vibrant and a better city. And so we need to continue to put that out there, and we need to make sure that the waves of people that are out there marching, that drumbeat and those actions have to continue and consistent. Just because this president, let's not be fooled, signed this executive order does not mean that we should waver in our activism. We should not be wavering in our coming together and doing rallies and mobilizations and going to the detention facilities and going to the centers and continue to have a presence. So that needs to continue to grow. It should not, people should not hesitate, and people should not hold back. We need to continue to put the pressure.
Jill in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Melissa Mark Viverito. Hi, Jill. Thank you for calling.
Hi. My question is, when the immigrants are allowed to, say, come into the United States, where do they get housing? Where do they get the money to pay for food? And who sits for child care so the mother can go and work?
Jill, may I ask when your family came to this country?
My father had a sister and cousins, and he lived with them.
Why do you think it would be so different?
Because I don't have the feeling that there are that many resident people to take the thousands of families that are coming through. But I'm just curious if there are. That's wonderful.
So would I be right to think that you would support immigration based on family unification? Somebody who has relatives here?
Yes, that would be good.
A brother, a sister?
That's a very good idea, of course. But I'm curious. What is going to happen when they're released as, say, to be accepted into the United States? Where are they going to get housing and money to pay for food, and who's going to do the child care?
Jill, thank you very much. Speaker,
yes,
go ahead.
I mean, well, there's obviously the first issue is that there are individuals that are coming and seeking asylum. So that we have to take into account that people are coming and asking for some level of protection and to be safe, right? Because they're coming from situations that are unsafe, that are violent, and that is why they're deciding to remove themselves and their family and their children from these situations. So we need to allow those cases to be heard, right? And there's this idea that the Republicans are putting forward that every single person that is coming to the border with a child is trying to scam us, and that they are just claiming asylum to claim asylum, which is not, again, borne out in fact. So immigrant communities, as have come here in generations, contribute by far positively to our cities. They have jobs. They are employed. They are contributing to the economy and the vibrancy of our cities. People come here to provide for themselves, for their families back home. There's a lot. I think a lot of misinformation that I think gets out there. And I'm glad that the caller is inquiring. But I think that a lot of the thinking, you know, might be a little bit misinformed. And so we need to keep putting the information out there about who is coming over the border and the situations that they're trying to seek relief from. And these are very violent situations that they're coming from. And we saw that with the unaccompanied minors when the wave happened a couple of years ago. These are children from Honduras, El Salvador, and areas that are extremely violent. And so we need to be able to be a place where people can seek refuge and that we give an opportunity. So when the president uses language like they're not bringing the best of them. I mean, he really is, again, the dehumanizing aspect of looking at us as mongrels, as looking at us as less than, as looking at us as parasites. And that is the language, which is not, it's not code at this point. It's pretty obvious that that's what the language is meant to do, right? And to strip us of any humanity. So we need to be clear about that, and that people coming here to do well for themselves and for their families.
And I think the last caller, who didn't sound like she had a lot of hate in her heart, but could still wind up, even though her own father, she said, was an immigrant who came and was able to start supporting himself because there was a community of relatives here, to see people who are doing the exact same thing as somehow at least an economic threat to her, I guess, and to taxpayers in general, at the same time that we have the Trump administration trying to cut down on family unification migration.
Yes.
That's why I asked her about, so it's a good thing if somebody has a brother here or a sister here, because as I'm sure you know, Speaker, the one of the president's main demands to come up with a comprehensive immigration reform compromise of any kind is that we end family unification migration for siblings.
Well, I mean, that's unfortunate. Yesterday, I was taking the bus, and a woman stopped me, undocumented, and she indicated that, you know, she was very concerned because obviously the family petitioning process, she says, I have to verify that in terms of information, but she says, you know, she has her children who are U.S. citizens, and that she and her husband are not, and that the children cannot petition for their parents, for her and her husband, anymore because that's been taken away. So the idea of the threat, right, that she has in her head, that she could be separated from her children because she's trying to find an avenue to be legal and she doesn't have that. She's run out of those options. So this is what you're alluding to as well, this thing of ripping families apart and trying to take away opportunities that would allow families to remain together and united and remain here in this country. So this idea of trying to make the situation so adverse that you're scaring people, right, from trying to come out of the shadows and trying to legalize their status, et cetera.
Ruben in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ruben.
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, thank you for calling.
So I just had a question on, like, how I can inform my community about what's going on. I'm Dominican-American, first generation, and, like, even people of my own community think that it's justifiable to separate these families at the border for some reason. And then, like, you tell them, like, they're coming from the same place that they did when they immigrated over here, and they don't believe it. Like, how do we, like, stop Trump's, like, rhetoric towards immigrants? Like, it's like he's turning immigrants against each other with the way that he talks.
No, and that's a very good point. I mean, I think the idea of engaging people and trying to, you know, educate them with facts, but also the idea that you said about constantly being present, right? We need to be out there to say that we don't stand for that rhetoric. We don't believe in what Trump is presenting, that those immigrants that we know, or people that come here to this country, are looking for better opportunity, as we all do. You know, I may have had my U.S. citizenship as a Puerto Rican, but I came here to New York City to look for a better opportunity, as do many others. And so we have to have that empathy, and we have to demand empathy. I mean, in some cases, because he's stripping us of that, right? He's trying to strip us of that and trying to make it seem that everyone that's coming over the border is trying to take your job or is trying to hurt your family. And people are unfortunately starting to kind of accept that language and applying it themselves. So the idea of being able to push back on that as you engage with people in dialogue, but also physically, by our presence being visible at events and rallies, we are pushing back. We're resisting. We're saying that this is not acceptable. And I think that that's really important at this moment in time, that we continue that pressure.
Ruben, can I ask you to describe more of the situation you were describing? Were you saying you're an immigrant from the Dominican Republic, but first generation, or maybe you're the children of immigrants? You can clear that up.
Yeah. But I'm a children of immigrants and stuff like that. So,
but that you're seeing first generation, so your parents' generation immigrants actually siding against the in particular, is it the undocumented immigrants coming?
Yeah, any form of undocumented citizenship, like, they came through the legal channels, so they feel like they're justified to say that if I came legally, like, this is a common issue in the community. Like, they would say, oh, I came legally, so why can't they do the same as me? And they don't even particularly know that the process is racist because they only specifically have a quota for Hispanics. But then they're more willing to accept the Europeans. And then when you tell them this, it's like, oh, no, that's a lie. I got in fast. But then if I sponsor my cousins for citizenship right now, I would have to wait 6 to 7 years for them to get into this country.
Ruben, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it. Actually, it's not true, Speaker, is it, that there's only a quota for Hispanics?
No, I mean, to start getting into the weeds on that stuff, I'm not a lawyer, but definitely there are, as he was alluding to, there's just impossibilities of trying to, you know, when people say, oh, they'll go through the legal channels. There really isn't an opportunity to do that. And we have to go again to the majority of people that are, a lot of people are leaving seeking asylum. So that is a legal right? That's a process that people have the ability to claim and that we have to be able to allow them to be able to hear their case and make their case. And that's being denied as we speak. So right. The issue that people are fleeing violent situations, and that is something that we are losing sight of as well, is that these are conditions at times that have been created from unjust policies, right, towards countries. And so we have situations that are adverse in the countries of origin where people are living, and they have feel no other option but to uproot themselves and leave because right. They can't find jobs or it's unsafe or it's, you know, for their children. And they're taking that risk.
And of course, there are the different categories of migrants who we're talking about now. Some are sort of what you might say regular undocumented immigrants, people who have just come here to try to make a better life. And there are the people who are coming here to seek political asylum, specifically because some of the conditions in the Central American countries are so incredibly dangerous mm-hmm. right at the moment. You know, one argument for how to proceed politically to resolve the larger issue, and it goes to Ruben's call and what he's hearing among even his own immigrant parents' generation, is why not give Trump his wall? Our political process has to decide our immigration policy, who's admitted and how many and from where. That's a matter of political debate and ultimately a vote in Congress. That's how immigration numbers have gone up or down throughout U.S. history. But if the physical border isn't really a border, we're always going to be distracted. And millions of Americans are always going to be distractible by this issue of illegal entry, giving people like Trump the excuse to portray Mexicans as, quote, illegals, rather than look at the actual pros and cons of immigration. Does that argument to give them the wall, to make the border secure so we can have this immigration debate in a more straight-up way, make any sense to you?
No, I mean, I think it's just, it's smoke and mirrors, right? And first, let's start off by him saying that he was going to make Mexico pay for the law, right? So this is just a waste of resources. It's a distraction. It's red meat for his base, and that's why he continues to agitate and use it. It's a waste of resources, and it will never do what he alleges it will do. So I think, again, these are distractions that are being used, and we just can't allow ourselves to be taken down that path, and we just have to keep pushing back on what he is doing here. And now we have this challenge of the indefinite detention of families. That's where we need to start focusing. And again, that we should be unrelenting in our activism and our advocacy.
Peter in Cold Spring Harbor, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling.
Hi, Brian. I have to say, as a first-generation American whose family came over in 1956 from Eastern Europe, I just find the hypocrisy so glaring. I've been following this for years. This has been an issue on the books for years. The enforcement of our laws, these are our laws. And now to turn around and say, we've gone through this with our last president, nobody stood up and said a word on either side of the aisle that this was a problem.
Well, you know that there were large immigrant protests against Obama, and he got called the deporter in chief. And did you miss those stories?
No, I did. And then the ramification of that was to close the family centers. And so we don't have the family centers any longer. And the law is 20 days, and that's it. Change the law. This whole idea that this president created a problem is so hypocritical, we can't even say the word illegal anymore. We've got to come up with another term and call it undocumented. We're a country of laws. My family
were
came
you,
over.
You,
hang on, let
dollar?
Him speak. Let him hang on. Let him finish.
Okay.
Peter, go ahead.
My point is, my family came over. They followed the law. They had to live with people. They had to be vouched for. They had to have jobs. If they didn't, our other family had to vouch that they would take care and pay. Listen, we're a country of laws.
Speaker, go ahead.
No, were you bothered or disturbed at all at what's happened the last couple of weeks of the separation of children from their families?
Again, unfortunately, because we're using this idea of asylum now as, here, read these 20 words, claim asylum, and now you're in a different category. It's not the right thing to do. Not everybody is coming here claiming asylum truly deserves asylum.
But I'm asking, I don't think you answered my question. The issue of separating these children as young as 5, in some cases they could have been infants, you know, and separating from ripping them literally. I mean, we heard the stories of a woman nursing her child and that child was taken from her arms. Or you have children that are screaming. I mean, I'm not sure if you have children. I don't have children, but I could not.
I have 2 children, yes.
Right. So it's the thought of...
And I don't relish the policy, but we have a Congress that makes laws that could change this overnight. And the Chuck Schumers of the world that stand up and say, I'm not voting for anything this president puts up, just exacerbates the problem.
The idea of separating the children from their families and the way that it has been done, we're talking about almost 3,000 at this point, that was not implemented under Obama. So this was a decision by the Trump administration to intentionally rip children away from their parents and not follow the process that was being done before. So that's a choice that the president made, and I think that's what we're saying, is that there's decisions that he's making and then creating a crisis that then he's trying to blame the Democrats or the Congress for. And that's not, I think, you know, we're losing sight that he's, again, causing distractions, and he's trying to project onto others the responsibility, but he bears this solely on his own. And so I think that's what I'm trying to get across with the comments regarding the separation of families and how horrific it is, and that does not reflect it well as a nation.
Peter, thank you very much for your call. And I think some of the confusion is that, yes, the law was in effect. Yes, there was a court order in effect. But the Obama administration was not pushing it to the point where there were mass separations of parents from children, because they were letting these families go on their own recognizance until
wait for their hearing.
And
exactly.
Wait for the hearings.
Court hearing.
But
yes.
Trump's point on that is that so many people in that situation never show up for their hearings and just go underground and try to start living in the United States as undocumented immigrants. And so you could see why people are frustrated with that, no?
We have to continue. There's been no serious attempt to deal anyway with comprehensive immigration reform. And that's been something that we've been wanting to see. But let's just take the scenario. We know factually that those immigrants that are here and are undocumented vastly by far, are contributing positively. They're not engaging in any sort of criminal activity. They are not hurting our communities. If anything, they're benefiting our communities, because a lot of times they are doing jobs that others do not want to do. But also they're contributing with their presence, the vibrancy, the culture, and the contributions economically. Mm. So what harm is being caused?
So
right?
Some of the...
This is a false... Again, it's demonizing us as a people. And to me, it's not lost on me that it's because it's people of color, right? And they're poor and coming and looking for a better opportunity. And they're being criminalized for that. I don't get that.
What would you say then to some of our callers, like the last one, who would hear what you just said as advocating open borders? Let everybody come across who wants to come across, and not make a distinction between legal and illegal, because by and large they're going to contribute to society. What would you do to enforce the border?
Now, look, I think we're overdue with a conversation on immigration reform. That's what I keep going back to, because there's been no genuine attempt to do that. And that's why I feel so strongly that I'm hoping, you know, with changing the Congress, that we can engage in a legitimate conversation. But again, I'm not going to allow people to vilify a family member or vilify anyone who's coming here to look for a better opportunity for themselves and their children. I will never criminalize someone who's coming here to work and contribute positively. And anyone that tries to do that should be ashamed. So that is what we have to do. The facts are the facts. And immigrants in this country are contributing positively to the economy and to the society and to the culture of our nation. And we need to be real about that. So anybody that tries to bring other distractions, to me, they're not dealing with the reality on the ground. And I think one of the things that you know, sometimes we have to also, we don't think about the fact that at times certain policies that we may be implementing as country, the harm that it does to other countries and the situations that it may create in other countries where people feel no other options but to be able to leave. So, you know, there's that conversation is never had, but we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of the inhumanity and the inhumane policies that are happening right now. And that we need to do something about this. It's just getting to be out of control.
My guest is former New York City Council Speaker Melissa Mark Viverito. We just have a few minutes left, and I want to touch two other things with you real quick that are very relevant to you, because it was in your former district that you represented in council, East Harlem, where the Cayuga Centers have this kind of contract with the federal government. And where New York One caught on video some of the children being brought here apparently from the border to be housed in East Harlem. Is that an agency you knew of when you were in office?
So, Cayuga from, no, they are recently, I just looked at their website yesterday, they were founded in 2014. In 2014 was actually my first year as speaker, and it was the first year that we fully funded the legal services for unaccompanied minors. So that was around the time when we started to see a surge in unaccompanied minors over the border. And then we had about 3,000. At that time, we determined we had about 3,000 unaccompanied minors here in New York City. So we expanded legal services for them. And it seems like some organizations were set up to help find, to partner them up. These children a lot of times had to be either looking for extended family members or to have find some sort of custodians that could take care of them. And so when they would come to court, we were able to fund the program that provided them with a lawyer. So they're relatively new. And so I guess based on the experience that they have, they've been contracted by the federal government, but I was not aware of them or their location.
Do you object or have any comment to an agency in your district participating with a contract like that?
It's complicated. When you think about, obviously, the child being separated from the parents is an abomination, and so that has to end. But the idea of having a kid be in a detention facility with absolutely no experienced personnel or limited services, emotional, psychological, et cetera, versus being in a setting where they might be able to get additional support services, it's hard. It's a hard question, you know, but we have to continue to fight to push back and make sure that these families are reunited. In the meantime, you want to make sure that these children are receiving emotional and psychological support and in a setting where they are receiving some level of love or engagement. And so it's a difficult question, but I'd rather them be in a setting like that than in the outdoor prison that you could see off in the distance in Tornillo, Texas. You know, that's not a conducive environment for any child. And they shouldn't have been separated to begin with, but yeah.
And last thing, I see that your group, the Latino Victory Fund, is planning to run TV ads paid for by liberal mega donor Tom Steyer based on the separation centers. It plays audio of children crying while the words on the screen say what it sounds like in Trump's child internment camps. And Steyer, as you know, is known for running commercials that advocate impeaching Trump, and he concludes the ad with his voice this way. Listen.
terrible things happen when you leave a lawless president in power. Donald Trump is unfit for his office. Call Congress now. If they won't stand up to him, they're just as responsible as he is.
He said when you leave a president like this in office, so is it now your position or the position of the Latino Victory Fund that Trump should be impeached?
Look, we are very unapologetic in being a progressive organization, and we support candidates that are progressive and Latino. We only endorse Latino candidates. So we have a bunch of candidates that we're supporting that are running in these midterm elections, and that we expect them to fight, and we expect them to hold this president accountable. So there should be hearings. There needs to be transparency and accountability, and that's what we're going to expect of those that we support. So I'm proud of what we've been doing and the candidates that we endorse and the messages that we're sending. And so I would stand by that. I'm not sure if it's the official position of the organization that will say about impeachment. I personally believe, yes, he should be impeached. And I know that there are other members of Congress that believe that as well. But at minimum, there has to be some accountability and some hearings in the committees of the Congress, and that's not happening. So we need to change the dynamic in order to ensure that our democracy is functioning and that it's functioning for the people of this country and not for one president and his family and his extended circle.
Is impeached on the grounds of Russia or something else?
No, I mean, obviously the Russia situation is again, we're not getting seriousness out of these hearings or the committees. There's a lot to investigate. So I think all of that is room. I think there's a lot of different ways that he can be found to be impeached. So we have to make sure that we just have an opportunity to expose or to hold these hearings and see what information we get. And I'm hoping that the Mueller investigation will also produce some information that could be of help here.
And just real quick, since you mentioned Latino Victory Fund working to get Latino candidates elected, you probably heard that Mayor Bloomberg, who was in office part of the time that you were in office in city council, said yesterday he's going to spend $80 million of his own money to help elect Democratic candidates. Are you in touch with him? Is Latino Victory Fund already coordinating or planning to coordinate with him in any way around particular candidates?
I mean, we would definitely be reaching out to him, definitely would love to partner with him. It actually come up in conversations in the past about us wanting to reach out and see if there was a way of partnering. And I appreciate that he's investing his money in this way. We have the Koch brothers, obviously, that have been doing this for decades, and this is the result. And I've been saying that, you know, and having read the Jane Meyer book, and I would recommend people to read it to really talk about the Koch brothers and the history that they have of investing their billions, and others like the DeVos family and others that have been investing billions over years. That's where we find ourselves. They've been able to buy out the Congress. They've been able to take over legislatures at the state houses, governorships, et cetera. And so we need to be able to consistently invest money in candidates who are going to reclaim our democracy. And that's where we are at this point.
Melissa Mark Viverito, we always appreciate you coming on. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the time, Brian. Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come. Stay with us.